Hi, everybody. My name's Edith.
Hi, Edith.
I am a compulsive spender, debtor. I'm an alcoholic. I am a codependent, a food addict, an electronics addict. I'm looking at my list. Oh, a sex and love addict. And I have done the work as it's laid out in this big book with the help of two big book study sponsors and loving God, and made most of my amends. I have some left, but I'm willing to make them all, living in 9, 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis to the best of my ability. So grateful for this program, this group of people. I was saying before it started, I just love this meeting. I love the people in this meeting, and, you know, both are just, all of y'all in this meeting are just such a big part of my recovery and continue to be so. So, wow. Step one, part two. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. About 10 years ago, when I first made my way into a 12-step program, it happened to have been a food program, and I have to say, now looking back on it, I'm convinced it was a God thing, because how often, I mean, especially 10 years ago, do you see an article about OA in a magazine? And there were these three different articles about ways that three different people who had issues with food had addressed them. And one of them was by an anonymous, of course, article by someone in OA. And I thought, you know, I'm going to try that, because thank God, literally, I know God put this thought in my mind that I didn't necessarily use the word powerless. Matter of fact, I'm sure I didn't use the word powerless. But I knew beyond a shadow of doubt, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I was powerless over food, my food addiction. I mean, I've shared before, I would go through like three drive-thrus, eat three complete full meals, then stop at a convenience store and try to find the holy grail of desserts, eat all kinds of stuff, and, you know, but nothing satisfied it. A counselor once asked me, you know, do you feel like you've got a hole? And I said, yeah, I do. And she said, about how big is it? And I said, about the size of a bowling ball. So that's pretty big. And I was trying to fill that void with food, you know, stuffing down those emotions, and a lot of other things I eventually figured out, as my long list of addictions will attest. And I will say that this has been such a process for me, admitting that I was powerless over all those things, and more may be revealed, because as I've shared with you, you know how it says, most of us has been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. Well, it wasn't until I, you know, was finishing up my fourth and doing my fifth step that I realized I was a real alcoholic. And I've said this many a time, in spite of the fact that my very patient and loving sponsor said on more than one occasion, and you don't identify as an alcoholic, you know, when I would tell about some of the tales of things I would do when I was drinking in my younger days. And fortunately, when I got in the food program, I got me a sponsor, and about 3 days in, I said, you know, that night, I was calling her every night, and I said, you know, I noticed I had something to drink every day, the last 3 days, not much, not necessarily a lot. I said, I had like a glass of wine or half a beer one day, and, you know, she said, well, you know, alcohol's not part of this program. I was like, oh. So by the grace of God, I just stop drinking. And now I look back on that and say, by the grace of God, really, and thank you, God. But I still didn't identify as an alcoholic, you know. It's that denial. You know, there's so many warnings in this chapter. Warning. Because I was unwilling to admit those things. And I've got to be willing to admit that I'm powerless over them in order to have any recovery. You know, to realize I can't do this by myself, because the warnings in here, it tells a lot about, you know, what won't work, like my own willpower, Edith's power, never worked, because when I was using my thinking and my direction, you know, when I was the director, it had horrible, horrible results with all of these addictions. So that was a biggie for me, because I can say I am delusional, but I really was delusional, because I was not armed with the facts about myself until I got into my fourth and fifth step. And it talks about that, about how delusional we are. I mean, and I love these stories, because they, you know, they make little mention like, you know, this might be a little exaggerated way. No, this was exactly how I thought and exactly how I acted. You know, now the substance might have been alcohol or food or relationships or one of those other things, but these cute little quaint stories spell out exactly how I thought and how I acted, and on occasion how I can still think and act, because I am delusional. A delusion is a false belief, and I had a lot of false beliefs. And I love it in here somewhere where it talks about we had to give up our views and how we thought about some things. And I love the understatement. You know, I was thinking about that as we were reading this. You know, they so understate so many of these things. It says several, I think. Somewhere in here it says, you know, we have to give up several things that we thought. Well, for me, it's been a lot of things. And it continues. I continue to find more and more things, more and more ways of thinking that I need to give up. You know, ways of thinking that I developed as a young person or as a result of things that people told me that just are not true. And I figured out they're not true because I just thought of that song. You know, I can see clearly now. If I'm not in a food fog or an alcohol fog or, you know, zoning out on TV or, you know, a lot of the other things that I can use to suppress emotions and to keep from doing things that are helpful to me and to others, then by all means, I'm not going to be productive. I'm not actually really able to help people. And I'm certainly not going to be happy, joyous, and free. I love this. Followed by still less control. In other words, you know, we real alcoholics and all those other things that I am, I never, never, never will be in control of any of those things. Never, ever. And I love the word smashed. It's a powerful word to me. Smashed. You know, the delusion. Because it's a false belief. Delusion. False belief. The false belief. The delusion that we're like other people. Or presently, maybe. You know, maybe I will be in the future. No, I have to smash it. It has to be smashed. And that, too, has been a process. God is helping me smash that, and people in this room are helping me smash that, and these CDs I listen to and the other meetings I attend are helping me to smash that delusion, those false beliefs. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Yeah, demoralization. To render distrustful and hopeless. I felt that when I first walked into a 12-step food room because I just, well, I was probably a little distrustful, but I was mostly felt hopeless because I knew I couldn't control my eating, even though I tried. And the progressiveness of this disease is so spelled out here. Oh, my gosh. Over and over again. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Over any considerable period, we get worse. I get worse and never better. And that's how this disease works. I mean, like the guy, I do love these stories, as I said. I mean, the guy's 30 years old. So he realizes, okay, drinking's kind of going to mess up my career. Notice that. So I'm going to stop drinking. If I want to be successful, I'm going to have to stop drinking. So he stops drinking for like 25 years, and he retires. He's 55 now. He hasn't had a drink for 25 years. Then he felt victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline, you know, it says in those things we read every day that we're not disciplined. You know, God has to discipline us. And self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. So out come his carpet slippers, his robe. Well, in 4 years, he was dead. That's progressive. And it even says, a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. And that, to me, even shows the progression of the disease. Because, you know, at age 30, he stopped. He was able to stop for 25 years. Okay? So now he hadn't had a drink in all that time, and then he's 55, he retires, and he can't stop. You know, he wanted to, but he couldn't stop. I mean, I do believe that all my diseases are progressive diseases. This case contains a powerful lesson, warning, warning, warning. Most of us believe that if we remain sober or abstinent or whatever for a long stretch, we could hereafter drink normally. Nope. I can't stay absent from sugar, flour, and wheat. This is me personally. Sugar, flour, and wheat are my things. I can't stay absent from those, and then it scares me to think about eating those things. I don't want to eat those things because I know it doesn't matter how long I haven't eaten them. As soon as I eat one of those things, as soon as I eat sugar, for example, oh my gosh, it's just, I've just opened the door, opened the barn door, boom, I'm off and running. Sugar, sugar, sugar. I can't get enough sugar. And then I'll be right back in that fog again and, woof, you know, weigh 55 pounds more like I used to do. Here's the lesson in all that part. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Once a food addict, always a food addict. Once a spending debting addict, always a spending debting addict. You know, and on, whatever my disease is. So I have to have no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday I'll be immune to any of those things, to alcohol or any of those things. I gotta smash that idea. Because once in a while, a little thought will come across there, you know, one of those might taste kind of good, or man, that wine that she's drinking sure smells good, or, you know, whatever. I've got to smash it. I've got to pray is what I usually, if it doesn't immediately go away, I pray, God, take that thought away from me. And guess what? It works. Because I do have the peculiar mental twist it talks about. My mind is twisted, just like this guy here who thought he could start drinking again. And even more like, is Jim the next one, the auto agency? Yeah. Jim, I love Jim. He's like, he's so delusional. He's so Edith, you know. he's talking about, first of all, to me, this shows so clearly what resentments can do. You know, when I was doing my fourth step, I really saw about what my resentments did for me. And to me, this really, really shows what resentments for me can do. Because, you know, it talks about, of course, he's got clouded thinking. He's delusional. I came to work on Tuesday morning, and people have joked and said, well, what happened to Monday, you know? Okay, yeah, okay. I remember I felt irritated, okay? Is he irritable, restless, and discontented? Let's see. That I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. Well, yeah, that could create a little resentment. You know, you own the thing. You inherit it. You own this whole lucrative business, and now I'm a salesperson for that business? That could create a few resentments. Would have for me. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. That's delusional. Let's face it, folks. I don't know, you know, most of us have been in one of the workplace, and having words with the boss, when is that not serious? I mean, that was always serious for me. You know, that's just not something, and that's not something I would want to do today, because I've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even bosses. So I'm retired, so that makes it even easier. But I was in this program when I wasn't retired, and it changed my life. It changed my whole work situation. So he heads to the country. I love this part. So he's going to go into this bar and have a sandwich, right? So he goes in there and he orders a sandwich and a glass of milk. No thought of drinking. The whole time he goes in there, I'm not worried about it because I've eaten here before when I've been sober. So he orders a sandwich and a glass of milk. No thought of drinking. So he orders another sandwich and another glass of milk. So now he's had two sandwiches and two glasses of milk, and I'm starting to think maybe there's some other addiction going on here, but maybe not. I don't know. Suddenly the thought, I love this in italics, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. And I've often said that's the Edith type of drinking, thinking, same thing, drinking, thinking. That's my peculiar mental twist. That's how my mind works. To think that if I put the whiskey in the milk, it'd be okay. That's the kind of thoughts I can have. That's the Edith thing. Okay, I ordered whiskey, poured it in the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. I think that's God trying to say, Edith, you're an idiot. Of course it's not going to make a bit of difference if it's in that milk. You're still going to have the same effects from the alcohol. And all that means is then now you've had three glasses of milk and you're about to get drunk. But felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. Yeah, we come up with all these delusional thoughts about why, you know, why we can do something. I did anyway. The experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey, so now he's had two whiskey, more milk. Is that four milks he's had? He's already had a quart of milk. Okay. Didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Okay, so that's probably over a quart of milk, and, you know, just on and on with the whiskey. More and more and more. And that's that. I've heard people say it's a disease of more. And once I start, man, Katie barred the door. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment. Now look at all this. The things he could lose. He could get committed to an asylum, and I bet that was pretty horrible back then. Loss of his family. Lose his position. You know, all those things, his relationships, his finances, you know, his freedom, all that could go down the tube. To say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering, which drinking always caused him. You know, the suffering, mentally and physically, all of that stuff didn't matter. Didn't matter a bit to him because he had that peculiar mental twist. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. Self-knowledge is not enough, folks. Yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of a foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. And that's the kind of foolish ideas that can come to me. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity, right? Thinking, you know, doing that same thing over and over, drinking that. You mean it doesn't matter if we put it in milk. I'm still drinking. And it's going to have the same insane or sometimes worse, because it is a progressive disease, results. I just don't have the ability to think straight. And I love where it says, you may think this is an extreme case. And nope, not for me, because I was just that extreme, more sometimes in certain areas. Because I could come up with some insanely trivial excuse to eat addictively, to drink, etc. Okay. Yeah, justification. I could always come up with some wild justification for that. And the jaywalker, oh my gosh, again, talks about the progressive nature of the disease. I think it's probably just a metaphor, but hey, it works for me. You know, first he slightly injured a few times. Then he, you know, several times in succession, over and over again. And then he gets a fractured skull. And then he gets a broken arm. And then two broken legs. See the progressive nature here? And finally, he runs out, he gets out, he runs out in front of a fire truck or something, and he gets a broken back. And what are the things he's losing there? Well, okay, he can no longer work, so his finances are shot. His wife gets a divorce, so his relationships are shot. Held up to ridicule, so his that's just socially, you know, down the tube. And he tries everything. And then, of course, that's when he gets his back broken. So it's like, it, you know, it says you may think that's ridiculous, but it's not at all. I put, heck no, it's spot on for me, because that's just how ridiculous my thinking and my the progressiveness of what I was going through had been. So next page, self-knowledge. Absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Self-knowledge is not going to do it. And Fred, oh my gosh, Fred goes through the whole deal too. And I said, this is how I think. Then came the hospital, unbearable mental and physical. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening. Not only had I been off guard, I'd made no fight whatever against the first drink. You know, it's just as I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind, it'd be nice to have a couple of cocktails. That was all, nothing more. So he ordered a cocktail with his meal. And that's just as subtle, as cunning power and baffling as alcohol or food or any of those other addictions for me can be. No fight, whatever, whatsoever. So, what does work? I know self-knowledge doesn't work. I know nothing self, nothing I can do. I know no human power, no psychiatrist, no counselor, no boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, best friend. None of that can do it. What can help? Spiritual. It's got to be a spiritual answer. It's got to be divine help. On page 43, it tells us. Though not a religious person, I found profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there's virtually no other solution. That's pretty black and white. There's nothing else that's going to work for me except a spiritual solution, period. That's it. This whole book focuses on that. The alcoholic at times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. My mind, my thoughts are not going to work. As a matter of fact, they're probably what's going to mess me up if I allow them to, if I don't go to God. Except in rare occasions, neither he nor any human being can provide such a defense. Last sentence, here it is. His defense must come from a higher power. My defense against all of my addictions has got to come from my higher power. So I got to keep coming to these meetings. I got to keep doing these readings. I got to keep speaking. I got to keep listening to what other people say. What a concept. Never used to do that either. Oops, time, I think. All righty. So that being said, I'm just going to pass and hear what other people have to say about this. But I know I'm very grateful for this program and for the people in this room.
Thank you.